This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 533, recorded on January 23rd, 2018. My name is Martin Spriggs, and joining me, as usual, the lovely, the talented co-hosting partner for 533 times, or very close to that, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how's the Great White North?
I was going to say, the lovely, the talented, the buried under a blizzard, Sally Draper, because we...
All those calories you're burning with that shovel.
Yeah.
You sold your snowblower just in time.
This is true. We've been doing the downsizing thing at the Draper Homestead, and someone knew a blizzard was coming and needed a good deal on a snowblower, so we thought it was time to get rid of ours while it was still a market for it, because springtime, I don't think, would do as much good to try to sell a snowblower. But
that's smart marketing. Just before a big blizzard is the time to sell your snowblower.
It worked.
It does have consequences, though.
However, I was like out in the street this morning flagging down someone with a plow on the front of his truck to get my driveway plowed out, because it was deep out there. I'm talking knee deep. Just about, and all of that in one day. So New Ulm really got dumped on yesterday. Pretty day to watch the snow come down, but really hard to deal with all that it left in its
place. It is the season. We've had we've had a pretty light winter. We had a white Christmas and didn't have, you know, tons and tons of snow, but just enough to make it a white Christmas. Other than that, it's been really nice here in January. So
yeah, us too, until we sold our snowblower. So yeah, live and learn.
Careful what you pray for.
There you go.
All right, Sally. We are in the midst of January, not only the snow and snowblower season, but a season where we've dedicated a month toward getting your professional development game in shape. The turn of the calendar to the new year makes us think about resolutions and think about, well, what could we do better in 2018? And there's probably not a one of us who probably couldn't say, well, I could have learned a little bit more, could have gotten a little bit better at what I do. And so we're sharpening our skills month here on Wells Tech, and we've had some fun so far. And we decided to ask the audience for this week. We put out a survey talking about professional development on the faculty or staff level to see what's going on out there, if people are doing it, what kinds of goals are being set, those kinds of things. So we put out a Google survey and some interesting results.
Yeah, I was really excited, first of all, that we had 43 people take our survey, which is pretty good. We didn't really know what to expect. Put out some messages to our various Wells Tech channels, and people chimed in and took our survey. We were asking them to be anonymous in the process. We didn't ask for church or school names or their names or anything like that. We just wanted to know if they were at a church or school and what size faculty staff they had there. And we got 43 responses, as I said, mostly from schools. There were some that were church specific and some that were both church and schools. The average school size people that responded, the average size was 21 faculty staff. But I will say that I could tell that some of the responses were perhaps from some of our college campuses as well, because some of the faculty numbers were very, very high. And I don't think any of even our Lutheran high schools have the number of faculty that were reported for some of the responses. So maybe that school number is skewed a little bit toward larger schools. But we definitely had plenty that responded that had fairly large faculties in their schools. Church and school combined had an average of 11 people on faculty and staff. So, you know, we had the range. We had the single, I assume, pastor in the church all the way up to really large faculties and staff. So just kind of a mixture there. And we only asked, let's see, about four questions. They were pretty simple, yes, no questions related to professional development, kind of focused on the church and school level, not necessarily on the individual level, but more, what do you do in your church and school? So the first one, Martin, was, are your faculty and or staff members expected or required to complete professional development? And really not a big surprise here for schools. 80% said yes. I would expect most would say yes when it was both church and school, 75%. The one surprise, though, was on the church only. Those that responded church only, only 22% said they were expected to complete professional development. So probably something that, you know, your pastor, parish, relation committee, or whatever might look at, because you definitely want to encourage and support in the church setting doing the professional development thing as well.
Yeah, it was interesting that the number was that low on the church side, because it wasn't required only, it was expected. So there was an expectation that there would be professional development going on. And I can't think of a scenario where a congregation wouldn't want to expect that of their leadership, of their staff, that there is professional development plans going on and a desire to do that. There shouldn't really be anything standing in their way. But obviously the reason the schools were so much higher is for accreditation purposes, and that's definitely part and parcel of WELSA accreditation, but also state certification for teachers, those kinds of things. They have to have a PDP and, you know, those kinds of things. So that's kind of baked into that process. So that's no surprise there.
Definitely not. I guess just kind of circling back to the soul pastor kind of scenario, I'm sure that most congregations support the idea of professional development, but probably just not verbally saying that to your called workers. And maybe it's time that you do, that we encourage you to continue to grow, and we're here to support that, including financially. You know, let's put it in the budget right. for you to have right. Some continuing education, or go to a conference next year, or whatever it may be. So so that you're, you know, not just assuming, oh, well, that's a given, they're going to keep up on their skills or whatever, but you're actually putting words behind that and putting some budget behind it as well.
Any other insights that we gleaned from the survey, Sally?
Yeah, definitely. Next question was, do you have a professional development guidelines for your faculty or staff to follow? And the numbers here were lower. Schools only had about 30% that had guidelines specifically, like, we expect you to complete this many hours of continuing education or anything like that. So not really as strict on particular guidelines, but then they offer professional development opportunities for faculty and staff. 84% do in the school setting. So, you know, there's definitely professional development happening and being guided in a way by what they're offering at the school level. Our last question was, are one or more people on your faculty staff responsible for organizing professional development? So is this a responsibility assigned to someone that they go out and decide, you know, this is what we're going to study this year, or this is what everyone should be doing? And about 65% of our schools said it was assigned. Churches, just 33% said it was assigned to someone specific. So when it is someone's job responsibility per se, then maybe that's when it gets a little bit more traction on the faculty and staff, that someone is actively, you know, overseeing that these kind of things do get the attention that they deserve. And I said that was our last question, Martin, but there really was one more. We kind of asked an open-ended, what are you doing for 2018? What are your goals? And that gave us some interesting responses as well.
Yep, there was quite a bit of information there, and it's all over the board too. I mean, I think there's all kinds of different approaches to that, different thinkings, and, you know, from nothing to, you know, some pretty complicated, sophisticated, you know, all encompassing kinds of plans.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. One of my favorites was just read, 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 because, you know, as a group, you could read books together, or individually, you could be encouraged to read, you know, certain books or whatever to continue to stay fresh in your knowledge and things like that. Become a Google educator. So next week, we're actually going to talk with Jason Schmidt about some of the certifications and official titles and things that you can go for. But that was definitely on some people's radar. One that I really liked, and I went and took advantage of it, came in from Pastor Rob Gunther. Again, we didn't ask people to identify themselves, but he did in his comments, because he wanted to share with us how Grace Lutheran School up in Kenai, Alaska, does their ministry development plan, or at least gets kind of a written what each person's goals are for the year. And they do it using a Google form. So he shared a link to their form. It's password protected. So, you know, you have to be on the staff to know how to get to the form and what the password is and that kind of thing. But they basically have a simple form where they are encouraged to look back at the previous year and how their goal setting played out throughout the year, if they were realistic, if things got off track, you know, what they might learn from that, and maybe spend a few minutes reflecting on the previous year. And then they shift into looking ahead at the new year and give some guidelines up front about what the intentions are. And they use an acronym, SMART. SMART goals are strategic, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound, have a deadline. And so they are encouraging their teachers to set up goals that were SMART. And then they had different questions or different areas for them to consider. In each of the areas, they gave them a place to submit up to 4 goals. So spiritual growth goals. And they have an example, utilize a Through My Bible in 3 Years plan. You know, whatever your spiritual goals are, personal and family goals, exercise, whatever it may be, professional growth goals, attend workshops and conferences, classroom instruction or assessment goals related to, you know, how you're teaching or what you're doing in your classroom, technology and an instruction goals. So they've got a specific one that focuses on technology, for instance, using the smart board tool, learning more about it. And then finally, they finish with school-wide goals, where they have a place for them to submit up to 4 school-wide goals about things happening in the classroom and across the entire school. So really neat format, pretty simple questions, just giving people different areas to reflect on that are part of their personal and professional lives, and giving them a place to write their goals down. And then I assume they likely follow up and discuss them and then track how they do towards achieving their goals.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The other side of the spectrum, I guess, from looking over the survey responses, a lot of the reasons why organizations didn't do this were fairly consistent. A lot of them came back to budget. So there weren't dollars, or there wasn't dollars budgeted for this particular purpose. No time was one that would kind of came through. Maybe no vision or plan or something, you know, nothing built into the, you know, kind of the fabric of what you do, the strategic nature of your work. One that is probably not infrequent is kind of a flux, you know, in staff, state of change. You know, there's, you know, people moving around, wearing different hats, getting new responsibilities, and just trying to keep their heads above water. And a true professional development plan is lower down on that list. You're just trying to survive and, you know, make it to the next year, where you're actually going to be doing something different than you did this year. So where you got new staff in the mix, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, definitely. I know that someone responded and said, I'll be moving into a principal role next year. And I'm, you know, gaining traction on what I want to do as the leader in our school to encourage this. I think one thing that kind of came out of it was a lot of people do budget for conferences and things. And perhaps it might be strategic for a church or school to send people to different conferences, not, you know, three of you are going to XYZ conference, but allow people maybe on a rotating schedule. You only have one person going each year, but they come back and part of their responsibility is to share information they learned, sessions that they sat in, resources they gathered, whatever it may be, with the rest of the faculty or staff, so that everyone gets the benefit of those budgetary dollars going to support that conference event or whatever. So Lots of potential. One group mentioned that they were doing the MLC in-services, and we have a link that we will put in our show notes, but MLC has a great program that you can just subscribe to, and they have monthly in-service material available. I'm just bringing it up on the screen. Currently, they're doing Helping Every Child Succeed, 6 Highly Effective Teaching Strategies, The Foolishness of God, A Biblical Perspective on Science, and Conflicting World Views. And so you can get in on these, and they come out once a month, and there's great presenters that, you know, so you don't have to bring in a speaker to your school specifically, but can tap into this MLC resource instead. And, you know, they're very flexible and customizable to your particular faculty need. And dare I say, they're very affordable as well. So if you're interested in any of that, check out the link on the show notes, get in touch with the Continuing Education Department at MLC with Dr. John Meyer, and I'm sure they can get you set up for taking part in those faculty in-service sessions that they have available.
There's stuff out there if you want to do it, and I think our survey was, I was not surprised necessarily by the results of it. I was really pleased with the respondents. It was neat to get that many responses, but it's encouraging to see those that are really taking it seriously. And, you know, I would encourage others who are struggling with it to keep at it. It's an important thing. And that's really the focus of our month-long series is this is not easy. You have to intentionalize it. You have to put it in a plan. You have to budget for it. You have to put time into it. And but the other end of it is it's really worth it. You come out a better teacher, a better administrator, a better whatever, because you've put some energy into it.
And who knows, maybe this Wells Tech episode is just the spark you need to share with your school board or your board of whomever that oversees pastor-parish relations or whatever it is, to get them to consider budgeting some for continuing ed and supporting and, you know, helping you work on a ministry development plan of your own or whatever the circumstances.
This podcast is kind of our little professional development plan to some degree, because I learn something each and every week, which is kind of neat.
That reminds me. One of the people responded, read books, do ministry, listen to Wells Tech podcast, and eat my Wheaties. That was his professional development plan. I love it. I love that Wells Tech
components,
is in the mix.
Yes. Can't go wrong with any of those.
No.
All right, Sally. So we have one more week and sharpening your skills focus. And so I'm looking forward to welcoming Jason Schmidt in next week to talk a little bit about his thoughts on professional development. He has a responsibility for his school district to do just that. And I think there's some insights that he'll bring to the table that people will not want to miss as well when he talks about getting advanced degrees and certifications and those kinds of things. So next week for the final segment of our Sharpening Your Skills series.
Time we should for some news and tech.
Let's do the news and tech. And yes, we've got a couple of things here that are worth, I think, worth sharing with everybody. And one of those is a kind of some sad news that came out of The Verge. Well, actually, they just reported on it. The sad news is that over 90% of Gmail users still don't use two-factor authentication. And if you tuned into our series, was it 3 months ago, where we focused a whole month on security, this was something that we talked a lot about is Most services like Gmail and the like, Amazon, another one, you can turn on something called two-factor authentication, which means if you want to have access to your account, not only do you need to have a password, but you also need some other way of verifying to Google you are who you say you are. Sometimes that's a text message that comes to you and you just enter that in a little box. Sometimes you get a little app. It's can be a pain sometimes, but there's a little box you can check when you enter. Don't bother me for 30 days. So you have to, you can put it off for 30 days, but it's just a safety procedure. And especially for things like email and Gmail, if it is your kind of your primary communication tool, there's a lot of important stuff in there. There could be passwords, sensitive information, probably more than you think gets transmitted over email, or you contain that in email. So the fact that less than 10% are actually taking advantage of this free service is kind of disheartening. So if you fall in that category, you may want to rethink your security strategy. It's something very easy to turn on. There are different ways, again, to do it. So if you're in that 90 some odd percent, consider joining us in the 10%. This is a good club to join. Two-factor authentication is something you want to use, especially for things like Gmail or your password manager like LastPass, those kinds of things.
You know, Martin,
Sally, you're smiling and you're probably hoping I'm not going to ask you if you have two-factor authentication on Gmail.
I have two-factor authentication on Gmail. That's good, not girl. Why I was smiling, but I smiled when you said you can check the box that says don't bother me for 30 days, because I just activated it on my Amazon account. And so their box doesn't say you can check it, to don't bother me for 30 days. It says don't bother me on this device. So I've verified that I'm on my home computer, and I trust anybody that would sit down at my home computer, because I know nobody else does but me, kind of thing. And you can check it on your phone if you've put in the code and that kind of thing. And I just wondered what your feelings were about checking those boxes. Like, you were advocating you need this two-factor authentication, but then we say, but you can ignore it.
And there's a certain level of convenience too. I mean, uh-huh. If you had to do that every time, then that's a level of security that, maybe that's overkill. I don't know. Basically, you're authenticating and saying, yeah, this is my machine. So yeah, in those 30 days, that machine could fall into the hands of, whoever. But that, remember, that's two factors that are needed, the password and the device or whatever. So mm-hmm. I don't know. If you have a good, strong password on your machine itself or on your device itself, that's another factor, right, standing between who's going to grab your device and getting all your stuff. So mm-hmm. I don't know. You got to stop somewhere. But I would say it's definitely something to consider. The second piece of news that I wanted to share is that Apple is finally releasing, or at least opening for pre-orders, their new HomePod speaker. Is not the cheapest speaker in the bunch. It's more probably, if you've heard of the Sonos, if you've gone into Best Buy or whatever, they have these Sonos speakers for sale, which are supposedly high fidelity, high quality. Apple has some new technology, and it's kind of playing in that that space. Obviously, it'll connect up to your other Apple devices. Their marketing push for this particular product is the quality of the audio. It's not necessarily going to be, a bigger, faster, stronger Siri experience or anything like that. It will have some smarts in it, but multi-room audio and a few things like that, playing your music is really what they're after with this. So if you are all into the ecosystem of the Apple, and this is something that fills a gap for you. Just good news for you. If you have $349 spare dollars, you can get this little orb that you can put on your desk. I have to tell you, Sally, over the weekend, I had some Best Buy points. I picked up a Google Home Mini. So okay. It's sitting right next to the Alexa, and we had fun all weekend just comparing each, to each other.
Sure.
It's kind of fun. Cool. I'd say Google Home's a little smarter, but a little more chatty. Her responses are a little bit more verbose. Sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes not. But
yep. Reminds me of asking what happens when I die or something like that. What happens in heaven or will I go to heaven or something? There's a Google question you can ask, and she's pretty thorough in her answer, and it's a very good answer. Boy, I can't believe
We had that on the show a couple weeks, 2 weeks back. Yeah, fun. So,
I was wondering if Apple has plans for a mini version. They've got this high price tag compared to the others. Doesn't seem like they would get much traction with those that are already out. But
yeah, we'll see. They're a little Johnny-come-latelys on this.
Yeah.
But, Apple fans, doesn't matter for any of them. They'll buy it anyway. So we'll see how it does. We'll see what the reviews are like. Okay, let's move to the next segment of our show, which is Wells Now. Two things that we've been talking about over the past month or so is the Interactive Faith series, of course, that's going on every Wednesday, 6 and 8 Central Standard Time, studying the book of Isaiah. Pastor Hobbin is leading that study, so that'll go on to, we're recording this on Tuesday, you may get this on Wednesday, so it'll be tonight if you pick this up right away, but every Wednesday, 6 and 8 o'clock. So just go to wells.net/interactivefaith and you'll get all the information on that. And of course, we want to put another plug in for our skills page, our Wells Tech skills tool that is available to anybody who wants to plug in their capabilities for maybe perusal by others who might want to take advantage of those skill sets. That's at skills.wellstech.net. So take a look, go over there, make sure you read all the information before you upload your information, but it is there for you to get your name out there if you want to provide free services or if you want to make yourself available for a fee, whatever those services are. They obviously have to be tech related. And then if you're in the market for some of those skills as a church or school or organization of any kind, go out and take a look at what's out there.
Very good. One that I want to make mention of, something we haven't mentioned before on the podcast, is the new Wells Annual Report is now available. So they've done some really neat things with the annual report this year. You certainly can head over to wells.net/annual report and just download a PDF version or PowerPoint of the annual report. But the webpage is a lot of fun and quite impressive. They've organized it and embedded a lot of different videos from the different areas of ministry of Wells to go along with the content that's here. So there's a written message from the president, but we also have a video interview with President Schrader that's part of the webpage. And so it goes with the other sections. So we have Wells by the numbers. We have a section on preparing, so ministerial education, and there's a video that talks about our ministerial education system and how things are going there, along with different articles and things that are part of that section. And so it goes on further down the page, missions and interviews with the home missions administrator as well as the world missions administrator, and other areas of ministry are represented here as well. So a really neat interactive experience. There's all kinds of multimedia happening on this page, and something that you'll enjoy learning more about as you explore the different areas of ministry that are represented here. So fun stuff.
Very nice. Sally, that brings us to the point in the show where you and I get to pick something that's caught our eye and we want to share with everybody, our tips and picks of the week.
And mine is going to be based on some milestones I read about recently from a tool that we've talked about on Wells Tech in the past, Kahoot. Kahoot is basically a way to interact with your audience. Maybe it's in a classroom setting, maybe it's a presentation, Bible study, whatever it is, but you can create quizzes and things to go along, and people basically use their smartphones or tablets, put in a code to get to your quiz, and then interact with you. Take the quizzes in real time, and you see the results, you know, on the screen as people are answering your questions and things. So the exciting thing for Kahoot is that they've reached 70 million users. That's a lot of people using Kahoot. And I think classroom usage is driving a lot of that adoption. So pretty impressive. It says 47% of United States K through 12 teachers use Kahoot, and more than 50% of students use it monthly. So there's a 3.3 Kahoots posted every second in 2017. That's a lot of Kahooting going on. Yeah, and I think, you know, something that's got that big of an adoption is worth our attention. And maybe if you haven't tried Kahoot, it's time for you to go over to Kahoot.com and create a free account and set up one and try it in your classroom or in your Bible class this week or whatever it may be. It might be a really great way to engage your audience as well as reinforce the key concepts that you want them to walk away with. So Kahoot.com, and congrats on their 70 million users.
Nice. I have not used Kahoot. I've used Poll Everywhere. It's a similar service, maybe a little bit different to some degree. But I'm excited about this concept. I do a number of presentations, and the expectation is a little bit different now than, you know, maybe a couple years ago, where you couldn't assume that maybe everybody in the room had a smart device of some sort. And now maybe that's not totally the case, but the number is getting fewer and fewer, smaller and smaller of those people who can't participate. You don't really want to leave anybody out, but certainly for larger audiences, this could be a lot of fun and provide some insight into give a little bit more of a dynamic nature to the presentation.
Absolutely. If you've enjoyed it at Buffalo Wild Wings, you can enjoy it on your own presentations. That's right. Same concept.
Same concept. Yes. All right, my pick of the week is a plugin for Chrome, and it first of all touches two of my favorite applications. One of them, Chrome, which I couldn't live without, and the other, Trello, which was a pick of mine not too long ago. The plugin actually makes things a little bit more automated in how you would use Trello. So if you're in your browser and you add the plugin. And I believe there's a Firefox plugin for this as well. But it appears up in your tray in the upper right. And when you click it, you can enter a card right there. So you don't even have to go into Trello. You just say what board you want to put it on, which list, what the card title and description is, and even allows you to attach whatever it is whatever page you're on to that card. So if you're on a particular web page, you can click a button and then click add, and off it goes into Trello. So it just makes it a real easy experience to just add that. If you're adding a to-do item, if you're adding, you know, a note for a team, it's very easy to do. Now, you don't have all of the capabilities as far as tagging and lists and those kinds of things, but to get something into Trello, real easy. Another feature of this, which is kind of neat, is if you open up a new tab in Chrome and just hit the T and the space bar, you can search your Trello boards. So if I wanted to search for Wells Tech, I would just hit the T space and start typing Wells Tech, and then I would see all the Wells Tech boards or where Wells Tech is even mentioned. And it'll even search in the board for different cards that you have. So this would be a quick time saver. So if we're if you're in your browser and just need to jump into a particular Trello board, you could easily do that without taking your fingers off the keyboard. So for free, of course, as most Chrome extensions are, just sits up there in your tray or right from the browser bar, just a nice way to integrate Trello. And I ran across this because I was looking. There are some occasions where you just want to jot something down real quick before you forget it. So rather than trying to find a post-it note and a pen or get a notepad out, how can I make this digital and easy? And this is one way to do that. It's just why you're right in the browser anyway. Click the button, type, click add, and you're all done. So pretty cool. I like it.
Very good. Power Trello user, and it just got better, huh?
That's right.
Awesome.
All right. Let's move to our ministry resources section, Sally. And I ran across a blog post that just came out today, actually, by our friend Peter Frank from Concordia Technology Solutions. It's entitled Five Google Tools You Should Be Using on Your Church Website. And some of these you've heard before, I'm sure, heard of before, and some you probably haven't. Google Analytics, we've talked about on the show many times, the ability to see who's visiting your website. Google Search Console. I had to read his description to know what this was, but once I read it, I remembered that this did exist. Search Console gives you insight into how Google sees your site. It shows you what results are shown when people search for terms related to your site. Excuse me. It also monitors your site for errors, broken links, improper activity, all of which could affect your search rankings. So kind of cool. It also allows you to submit a sitemap to Google so that they will have an easier time searching your site. Google My Business, this allows when people are using Google Maps or doing a Google search that you're, when your business or organization comes up, it has all the right information, location, phone number, if you have other information like times of service, those kinds of things, that can be put into your Google My Business account. Google Tag Manager, a bit more complicated, as Peter states. Google Tag Manager helps you add and adjust JavaScript and HTML tags that track things on your site. Basically, it allows you to edit these bits of code that are embedded in your website without actually having to touch your code. And then finally, Google AdWords. This one costs you, the others are free. This one would cost you a little bit of money. He says, I know many churches don't have funds available for advertising, but if you do, I would start by spending it on AdWords. This allows you to your site to stand out at the top of relevant Google searches. We've talked about this concept in the context of Facebook ads, but Google AdWords works in a similar fashion where you can buy keywords, and it works in a similar budgeting kind of concept where you have a pool of dollars and you pick the particular words and you will not exceed your budget. So it'll only go up to that point, and then you get some data on how many of your ads were clicked. So good article on Google tools that you could or should be using on your church, or I would even suggest school website. Good stuff from Peter. Thanks, Peter.
Definitely. I'm excited to see him mention Google My Business. That's something we talked about many years ago in Wells Tech, and I actually set up for St. John's in Sleepy Eye when we were there. And I actually still get messages about the Google My Business set up for St. John's, even though I've transferred it to others. I think I'm still in the role as well. And what's neat about it is they'll send you analytics based on how many people used, you know, the data that you have out there for Google My Business. So you don't even have to go to analytics, Google Analytics, to look for it. They'll email you some of that interesting information, like how they found your site, how many people clicked through or called you or visited your website or whatever it is. So good stuff with that one.
All right. Mm-hmm. Sally, do we have any community feedback this week?
We do. We heard from our friend Alan Bunt. Alan is a longtime Wells Tech friend and had the good fortune to win a Google Pixel from us back at the Wells Tech Conference 2015. So that's kind of his claim to fame in Wells Tech terms. He wrote to us recently and asked about getting his school into Google Apps for Education, even though they aren't accredited. So apparently accreditation is a requirement as you're completing the information for your Google Apps for Education account. And he was looking for some help with that. And Martin, you referred him very wisely to the Wells Google Schools group on Google Plus, as well as our Wells Tech listserv in Google Groups. So hopefully Alan will ask some questions out there and be able to find some answers from those who are wiser than us in those things. I know that our school got it through Google Apps for Nonprofits. And, you know, with the school connected to the church qualified for the nonprofits. And that's the way we got access to Google app suite, but I'm not really sure if that's exactly the route you'd want to go. I think there's plenty that could advise you out there in those groups, Alan.
Yeah, his challenge is he wants to do some management of the Chromebooks. They bought a bunch of Chromebooks mm-hmm. for the school, and they want to get those registered, quote-unquote registered, and you can't do that without a Google Apps account. So hopefully somebody out there knows the answer to Alan's question and can provide a response there. Sally, I bet our video of the week has something to do with your pick of the week.
You are a wise one, like almost have the notes in front of you or something. It does, in fact, have to do with Kahoot. I was re-familiarizing myself with Kahoot after learning about how popular they are with 70 million users. And I found their YouTube channel and found a video that's very popular on their YouTube channel called Blind Kahoot. What is Blind Kahoot? And I think this is a really neat way to work with students and help them have good takeaways from your lessons and things. Students are probably aware of using Kahoot and how they use it, and they get excited when it gets brought out in the classroom, you know, let's take a Kahoot quiz or whatever, but they have an expectation that it's going to be on things they've learned and they'll know the answers to it and be able to be competitive and things like that. The concept here in the video is to have them do a Kahoot quiz on something they haven't yet learned. So present some questions to them that are going to be kind of stoppers, like they aren't going to know how to answer, and then present your lesson material. And that way they're really engaged in your lesson material and eager to get the answer right once they have a chance to get back to the Kahoot quiz. That's the process in a nutshell. And it's just a minute and a half video, so it'll, you know, give you a little bit of an overview, but the concept is the students would be specifically tuned in to those things that were asked in the initial quiz that they didn't know the answers to. So maybe something to work into your classroom strategies.
Very good. I'm looking forward to that. I'm really intrigued by Kahoot because I like what it does and what it can do with presentation. So I'm going to pull that out of my bag and see how that works. I have a presentation at in February. Men of His Word is a group that has asked me to speak up in, I think it's in Oshkosh maybe. So maybe I will find a way to use that, wedge that into my presentation somehow.
Excellent. Good, good.
Sally, that's going to about do it. I know you got to get back to some shoveling.
Thanks for reminding me.
And digging out and all that good stuff. Blessings on that. And I am really happy that everybody decided to join us, and hopefully they're getting something out of this this month-long focus on sharpening your skills. At least I am. And thanks to everybody. We should probably said that at the top of the hour. Thanks to everybody who participated in that survey. That was awesome for you to take the time to do that. Very insightful. And maybe we'll do a few more of those. I think that was good to get in touch with some of our listeners and understand what's going on in their ministry. So pretty cool. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Sally. And we will return next week with Jason in tow for a concluding episode of Sharpening Your Skills 2018 style. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.